This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. We join you here from Los Angeles, where I'm getting ready to go down to see the Rams take on the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC playoffs, the divisional round, of course, getting started today with the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the Indianapolis Colts in what's supposed to be a snowy Kansas City. That's going to be a wild one because they're talking about maybe as much as 6 inches of snow, maybe even a little bit more. So that's going to be a fascinating thing. So we've got lots to talk about. We're here for 3 hours, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with headlines. Well, Mariners made a move yesterday. Well, Seahawks made a move yesterday to sign Sam Ficken. Ficken's, of course, went with the Rams, struggled a little bit, didn't get a chance to kick too much. But, you know, much like last year, they went out and they got Jason Myers right around this time, signed him to a futures contract. Pickens gets a futures contract with Seattle. So I guess he'll be in the mix to see what they'll do at the kicking position. Sebastian Janikowski is in a one-year deal, probably not coming back at the age of 40. So the first search for a kicker has been added. Sam Ficken's being added. Gary Kubiak, who was supposed to be the offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos, apparently is not going to be. He wanted to bring a couple of his long-term assistant coaches, Rick Dennison and a tight ends coach, and apparently that was vetoed by John Elway and also by Vic Fangio. And so now it looks like he may go elsewhere or just stay in the Broncos organization in the front office. I know Jacksonville is interested in maybe bringing him in as an offensive coordinator. They've also been talking to Daryl Bevel, although it looks like Daryl Bevel very well might get on the Bengals staff because that's a name that Zach Taylor, who's expected to get that job, is wanting to add as far as an offensive coordinator. Larry Fitzgerald still uncertain whether he's going to play football this year. Of course, now they've made the hire, at least interesting one, of Cliff Kingsbury, the former Texas Tech coach. Steve Sarkisian. It looks like he may get the offensive coordinator job in Arizona. Kyler Murray expected to announce Monday that he is going to give up baseball and turn pro in football, expected to be a low first-round pick in the NFL draft. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How you doing on a sunshiny morning? I know it's sunshiny over there because it's sunshine over here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be sunshiny down here in Southern California. I know that it's supposed to rain tonight. I mean, it's okay right now, but I think storm clouds are going to come in and just a little bit of a drizzle. I know it's supposed to be in the 60s, which isn't too bad. But, I don't know it's going to be the best of weather, but at least it's not going to be as bad as Kansas City.
Yeah, I know. Hey, well, before we get to the football games, some of these hirings, Mr. Clayton, do you think is just trying to catch lightning in a bottle by watching what was going on down there with the Rams with their young coach? Do you think everybody's trying to make that trend instead of going after an experienced coach, going to a younger coach?
Oh, yeah, no question. And that's where the pool of coaching talent is just not that good. I mean, because what you're looking at is that everybody's looking for that offensive coach, and then by the end of all this, it looks like there'll be 6 offensive coaches hired and only 2 defensive coaches, which will take the total of offensive coaches up to 20. But what everybody's looking for is that Sean McVay to come in, be young, try to get that good look on the sideline, and then try to coach up young quarterbacks, and that seems to be the trend. But unfortunately, I mean, it's a big gamble. I mean, you can see a lot of these things have not worked out. I mean, you saw Ben McAdoo. He never had play calling experience before he went to the Giants. Did go to the playoffs the first year, but then he gets fired. Adam Gase gets to Miami. He gets one trip to the playoffs. He ends up fired and now gets the job with the Jets. But, yeah, that's what everybody wants, and that's the problem because there's just not enough guys that are even calling plays to even develop to the point where you can set them up to be coaches. I mean, I think it's going to be by the time we're all done with Zach Taylor getting the job with the Bengals, there's 15 or 16 offensive play calling coaches that are now running teams. Now, again, Bruce Arians is a play caller, but he's going to let Byron Leftwich call the plays. But, no, I think it's bizarre. And again, there's too many firings in the National Football League.
I agree 100%. I'm going to tell you the one in particular is the LaFleur going to Green Bay in place of Mike McCarthy. I mean, do you think he's that more offensive centric than Mike McCarthy is?
I would think not. I mean, McCarthy had great success from 2006 on, you know, won more than 120-some games. I mean, you can see that he's been to the Super Bowl. I mean, he's a good coach. In fact, that's the crazy part about this whole offseason. I mean, Mike McCarthy was the best coach available. He doesn't get a job. Now, apparently, I guess when you went to the Jets, they wanted you to hire a certain group of assistant coaches, and Matt Rhule, the Baylor coach, didn't want to do it. Mike McCarthy didn't want to do it. You know, they wanted to pick their own coaches, and it's like, you know, how can ownership meddle like that? And so now it looks like they're going to get Greg Williams as a defensive coordinator to go with Adam Gase. But, yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's like you don't get the best coach available, and so he sits out for the year.
I know it just baffles my mind, you know, because I think he's one of those coaches. He can definitely get there and make things happen. A lot of people talk about his track record prior to Green Bay, but remember, he was just an offensive coordinator. But he turned a lot. I mean, I watched him in New Orleans. I watched him in San Francisco. He turned those offenses around, and he made those quarterbacks productive. You know,
exactly.
What was that, Mr. Clayton?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was very successful. I mean, you know, he did it at a high level. And, you know, every year they were in the mix to go to the playoffs and in the mix possibly to go to the Super Bowl.
Yes, yes. I just can't wait to see next year and see how these young guys, how they look out there on the field. And do you see that turning around and saying, oops, I made a mistake, I might have to go back to a veteran coach?
Yeah, I think that I would not be surprised out of this mix of eight coaches that you could have 2 1-and-dones.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that right now. Cliff Kingsbury mm-hmm. in Arizona. He was over there with Tom Brady and the Patriots, but geez, I mean, a guy that got fired at Texas Tech, head coach.
Well, and then, I mean, is he going to be able to put a good staff together? That's what I wonder about now. And apparently, and that's the thing that's so strange about this. He's not even picking the staff. He's letting the general manager, Steve Keim, pick the staff.
Wow.
How bad is that? I mean, he comes in with no NFL experience, and any coach that has no NFL experience coming from college usually is doomed to be a failure. I know it worked for Jimmy Johnson, but there's only a small handful that's been able to work like that. And so I just think it's very problematic. And, you know, that's a curious one. Certainly the Matt LaFleur one, I mean, he comes from the 27th best offense in the league.
Yeah, I know. It baffles me. We'll talk about that one next week, dude, about the other ones that they hired. I mean, the Cincinnati hiring is kind of weird, too, coming in there.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you what. I mean, that one's kind of intriguing because there seems to be a big buzz about Zach Taylor because Zach, you know, he did have some play-calling experience when there was an interim situation down in Miami. They had just fired Joe Philbin, mm-hmm. and so he had some play-calling experience there, and he's 35, considered to be a pretty bright young coach, and even though he probably isn't ready this year, he was going to get a job in the next couple of years. And so the Bengals, and I think mainly on the recommendation of Jay Gruden, because, you know, you would figure if you're going to be Zach Taylor and you're going to be pretty much in demand, which he was going to be, that you might not want to take the Bengal job because that might be the worst job that's going to be available. But I think thanks to Jay Gruden, you know, they talked him into it.
Yeah, okay. We'll see next year how that goes. All right, let's talk about today, Mr. Clayton. Talk about the first game coming up, the Colts and Kansas City. If you look at this game here, Mr. Clayton, and you look at how it's structured and how it's turned out, Kansas City needs to get that running game to get some of that balance back. With Kareem Hunt gone, I look at their offense. It is still productive, but can it with the weather, inclement weather today, can it still be that productive right now? And can the Colts match up with them pretty good? How do you look at it?
Well, I think the Colts match up with them pretty well because, you know, the one thing that the Chiefs – now, remember, the Chiefs cannot stop the run. They're bad at that. They're bad in pass coverage. One thing they can do is get pressure on the quarterback with their three main pass rushers, but then that's what the Colts do the best. I mean, they're the best pass-blocking team in football, and so Andrew Luck should have time. And then with the weather conditions, I have to wonder, you know, is the footing going to slow down some of the speed that the Chiefs had, more so than the Colts? Because you can see with three pass rushers, if they can't get their footing, they're not going to get to the quarterback. And is Tyreek Hill going to be able to be as fast on the field if there's going to be snow and ice and all those different things? So, no, I think that the Colts can go in there and win this one.
That, you know, I like the way Andrew Luck. Didn't it, what you said last week, 18 sacks is all he had this year?
Yeah, that's it.
From that offense? Oh, wow, that's pretty interesting. What about your game this afternoon with the Dallas Cowboys? You, Mr. Clayton, I think the Dallas Cowboys is coming in with a good defense, but I just don't see them matching up on the offensive side. I don't think they have enough firepower on the offensive side, just in case if the Rams were to, if they were to jump ahead of them. Can you see the Cowboys matching up? Only thing I can see the Cowboys doing is trying to play ball control, run the ball, and keep that play keep away from that Rams offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's and it's funny because I think that this year in game-winning drives, Dak Prescott may have had the league lead with about maybe five or six, but it's in a different type of vein than, say, Russell Wilson. I mean, because Russell Wilson can come down from 10 to 14 points, where I don't think you can see Dak Prescott do that. And so the Rams are always a fast-starting team, and if they can get off to 10, 14-point lead in the second quarter, I think it's going to be hard for the Cowboys on the road to be able to come back and get the victory. You know, again, if it's going to be in the fourth quarter, yeah, I can see him getting one drive. But I just can't see them getting two or three drives to be able to win. And that's why I think, and again, you look at the record of the Cowboys, I think they're 1-3 against playoff teams on the road. They're 3-5 total on the road. They're going to be on the road here where the Coliseum, I think, is going to be pretty jumping and all that stuff. I think it's going to be tough for the Cowboys to win.
Just don't be surprised you have more Cowboys fans than you have Ram fans in that stadium. Just don't be surprised. You know,
although I do hear that they did have a real good sell for Cowboy people picking up tickets. But, you know, that's, I think last week, you know, being on the sidelines and that, I mean, it was pretty loud. That was the first time really in a big game like that in Dallas that they really had significant home field advantage.
Yeah, that was pretty, yeah, definitely. And I think the Cowboys are better at home than they are on the road, if you look at them.
Mm, agreed.
You know. Yeah, and I think Amari Cooper is going to have a little trouble because he doesn't fare real well against Aqib Talib that much. He doesn't fare real well against it. But let's move on to Sunday there. The Chargers and the Patriots. That is a very interesting game. I'll give the nod to New England just because it's Bill Belichick and what he does coming off of bye weeks, and particularly in the playoffs. But I'm going to tell you right now, the Chargers, they did something that was very exciting last week. They went to seven DBs in the backfield. And they with four down linemen. I know they did that for Lamar Jackson. Could you see them putting that package out there against Tom Brady this week?
I think they might, but I think that's where Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, knowing that can happen, can take advantage of it. Because the one thing that you can talk about, yeah, the skilled players on the Patriots are getting older. Tom Brady's not throwing as well. You can see Rob Gronkowski's a shell of himself and looking old. Same thing a little bit with Julian Edelman. But they also have three, four running backs that they can get into the mix. And if they're going to go seven DBs, then you figure that they're going to try to get their running backs out there trying to catch passes and run and try to, you know, get big on small. And if that's going to be the case, I think they'll figure out a way to do that. I mean, the thing that concerns me is that back-to-back East Coast games for the Chargers, the early 10 o'clock start West Coast time, 1 o'clock East Coast time, weather conditions are going to be, you know, a little snowy or at least, you know, not the right thing. So I think it's going to be tough, even though, again, I think that, let's put it this way, the two things interesting about this game is that the Chargers are the better team for talent right now. They have more talent, I think, than the Patriots. And really, the way that Tom Brady played, if you take the four quarterbacks in the AFC, you might rate Brady, the greatest quarterback ever, number four in the AFC.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
How about
that? You said that, Mr. Clayton. I know, that's unbelievable.
But think about this. I mean, did Rivers have a better season? Patrick Mahomes threw for 50 touchdown passes. Andrew Luck threw for, what, 38 to 40? And so you can make the argument that Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, you know, this year was the fourth best of the four quarterbacks in the divisional round.
Wow. That's it, Mr. Clayton. You just said a whole mouthful, my friend. Right quick with the with New Orleans and Philadelphia. How do you see that shaping up right quick?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard for anybody to go into New Orleans, the offense and the defense that the Saints have, and be able to pull out the victory. Then the other problem that you can see for the Eagles is that they've been hit so hard with injuries in the secondary. You know, can they match up against the things that Drew Brees wants to do? So, I think in this case, Philly's going to have a tough time, and I think the Saints are going to advance.
Well, Mr. Cleveland. You know, the game tonight, definitely enjoy that game. I think that's going to be a very physical game with the Rams. The one problem, yeah. The one thing I see, if the Dallas Cowboys can control the clock and run that ball, because the Rams are giving up a lot of yardage on the ground,
mm-hmm.
It could be very interesting for my friend.
It could be interesting. Hey, JB, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, and enjoy, Mr. Clayton.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
We're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Howdy, John. How are you this morning?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great, John. Doing great. It looks like the sun's come out here in Seattle. Are you remote now? Are you elsewhere? Are you down in L.A.?
I am down here in L.A. Ready to head over at about 12:30 to catch the Rams taking on the Dallas Cowboys.
That'll be a good one, John. I think it'll be a good one, but I think that the Rams will pull it out, my friend.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. John, there's been a lot of hubbub about Antonio Brown going elsewhere, and we talked a bit about it last week. Where do you think he's going to land, John?
You know, honestly, when you start to look at the landscape, I can see him going to the Raiders. And here's my rationale on that. You know, because you look at the first four teams at the top of the draft, and that includes the Raiders, they all need wide receiver help. Well, nobody in that top four is going to give up a top four pick because it's too rich for defensive talent. I mean, you've got really good players at the top of the draft, and there's no doubt that what the Raiders need to do is get somebody on the defensive line, more so defensive end than defensive tackle. So I can't see them giving up a top four pick. But the fact that they have two other first-round picks, particularly, you know, and that could even get the, you know, all in the 20s because they're all with playoff teams. So I think you could easily see that they can give a first-round pick more so than any of the teams at the top of the draft, and then maybe something else, and then get him as a wide receiver. So honestly, I think that if you were handicapping things, I would put the Raiders right now as a top team to try to get Antonio Brown.
Well, that's very interesting, John. You know, last year when Gruden holds his post-game news conferences, there were two players of note that he was quite effusive about, one of which was the most effusive was his praise for Antonio Brown. He said, he's the hardest-working person in football. He compared him to Jerry Rice, and he's seen Jerry Rice's work ethic. And he said that nobody works harder than Antonio Brown, and that's why he is so successful, which I thought was an interesting comment. And I just took it as, you know, whatever. He's just being complimentary. But now that's has a little more weight, that comment. And then the other comment he had was about Frank Clark. He said that Frank Clark is just an amazing athlete and a great player. And in any event, I don't know. You know, for me, John, I have a moratorium on knuckleheads. No more knuckleheads, John. That goes with Le'Veon, Brown, too, or whatever his name is there, the running back. I just, they got to get away from that, John. That's my opinion.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
No, I agree because, again, it's like they've added too much drama, too much turmoil. I mean, that Markevious Bryant trade was awful. Oh, third-round pick, and they get nothing out of that. And again, what I still wonder about is that, again, it wouldn't be a bad move. Again, I still think that they shouldn't have traded Amari Cooper, although getting that first-round value, I think, is okay. I mean, that's one thing that's good, but the problem that I have is that, do you get better by getting older? You know, a 30, 31-year-old wide receiver. I mean, you saw how well it didn't work out with Jordy Nelson. I mean, did you think that Jordy Nelson lived up to what he was being paid?
No, of course not. And it rarely, if ever, works. I think the only time in the Raiders' history where it did work was when they brought in James Lofton. Because Lofton was with Green Bay for a bit, came over with the Raiders, and then he went over and even had an even more productive career with Buffalo, culminating in being in the Hall of Fame. So that can work, but that's a rare case, John. And I just think his age. Look, he's a great player, but he's a kind of a knucklehead too. And I have issues with that. John, I really enjoyed listening to one of your podcasts. I got caught up on some of those things over the holidays. Were you and Merrill Hodge talking about his latest book on CTE and the data associated with that? I mean, you and I are both kind of data heads. We look at the data very carefully, and he has now done that with his book. And while I haven't read the book, I'm very curious, and I'll probably end up getting it just because, holy smokes, he's looking at something that's really important that is influencing the game throughout the league, and how we look at the game and the penalties associated with it, how they're trying to protect players. And I just think that it deserves a good read. And so I'm really glad that you highlighted that on your school podcast, John.
Well, and that's the thing that's interesting is that because, I know him so well, and, he was in one of the front lines of being players with concussions, because I know how bad his concussion problem's been. I remember being back in Bristol doing radio with him, and what we would have to do, because we were doing like a 6-hour show, is that at different times we'd have to adjust the lights, because with his concussion issues, the lights tended to bother him, and we had to kind of make things a little bit darker at different times. And then at different times, if he's doing something for 6 hours like that, I mean, I had to do things to kind of get his energy going, kind of getting into debates and all that stuff. And so, he speaks from knowledge because, he's had this. I mean, he's not saying that CTE doesn't exist. One of the things that he was saying in the podcast and in the book is that some of the people that are doing the studies are over-dramatizing it and coming to conclusions that may not necessarily be true.
Indeed. And, the thing about Merrill Hodge that's interesting too, John, is that he is not afraid to call out or to speak the truth about things. For instance, when Randy Moss was with the Raiders, he would always say, before he was with the Raiders, he was saying he was dogging it. He was not going all out. And there was a lot of veracity to what he was saying. And I admired that about him. And, when he comes out and says stuff like this, I think people should take notice because it has a lot of bearing on how we view the game and how we look at the game. And the other thing about data, John, and this is where the media tends to fail us sometimes, is that, they come out with these studies and they're preliminary or it's a survey or it's not a very large sample size. And these are the kind of things where we need the media to come up and say, this isn't really the most robust study. We need more information before we can really make a determination on how to proceed. And you got to give the NFL credit. At first, they were very patient and they were very cautious about how they wanted to proceed. But the public opinion has been such, and the outcry has been so such that they feel like they had to do other things. And I'm not sure whether that's been good for the game, John.
No, agreed. And the one thing that Merrill's sensitive to is all the talk about concussion, can ultimately damage the game to a point where, and you see it now, so many parents, so many moms will not let their son play football because of worry about concussions. And that's a big concern because, concussions are certainly a big issue. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a 13-year-old and my ex-wife won't let him play because of the notoriety associated with concussions. I mean, I want my son to play. He wants to play, and I think he should play.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this has bearing on all of our lives in certain ways. So, I think every kid should be able to play football, and I think it's a great game. It's a great, great character builder, and if you want to be successful in business going forward in the future, play football or play rugby. I mean, those are some great games where you can learn how to work with each other and collaborate in order to get to a certain goal to be successful. And, football will teach you that anyway.
Exactly. Hey, Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John, take care.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll chat with Mike Triplett from ESPN.com, get a preview of the Saints. He covers the Saints for ESPN.com. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us is Mike Triplett from ESPN.com, covers the New Orleans Saints. And so I would imagine that this game coming up on Sunday is not going to be much like the 41-7 victory. You figure it's going to be closer, but boy, it's going to be tough, I think, for any team to go into New Orleans and beat Drew Brees and Sean Payton.
Yeah, hey, John. I agree. Obviously, you don't predict 41-point wins, and the Eagles have become a different team since that first game. But you also can't completely ignore the fact that these matchups obviously serve the Saints well. There was something they felt like they could pick apart in that Eagles defense, which has struggled against the pass all year long, and they had a lot of success doing that. I think we'll see a better effort from the Eagles front four, because I think it's one of the best in football with Fletcher Cox at defensive tackle and the edge rushers they have. It takes a lot to hold up against that offense, especially in the Superdome.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, what makes them so good in the Superdome? I mean, I know it's noisy. I mean, I know at different stages that when I would try to do radio up in that, because, again, the press box is so high up near in the ceiling, is that I would literally have to go under the tables to be able to just try to hear if I was talking to anybody back in Bristol.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And look, I mean, shoot, you're up there in Seattle, which is known for probably being even louder, or I think they've had a back and forth with the decibel meter readings in the past to claim who's the loudest. But, Sean Payton made a really good point, which is that's not an automatic advantage. You know, he said the Saints had a lot of lousy years with lousy home records. He said you got to be a good team to take advantage of it. But I think what obviously it works so well for the Saints is they are one of the best offensive teams in the league, with one of the best offensive play callers and game planners and one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so they're more special at home because, you know, they take out all the things that could take away from that. There's no weather conditions to affect their offense. There's no crowd noise to affect their offense. There's no, you know, surface issues with bad turf to affect their offense. So it just allows their offense to, you know, to work unencumbered, and it's a special offense.
Yeah. Is there any sign of, I know there may have been a little bit noticeable last year, but doesn't seem to be noticeable this year. Is there any decline at all in Drew Brees?
Man, I would have told you, of course there is, heading into this season, because, I mean, it's only natural that he's not what he was in 09 or 11 in his absolute prime. But for most of this year, he was playing as well as he ever has before. He finished the season with his best passer rating of his career. He again set the NFL record for completion percentage, almost 75%, which is just ridiculous. And for a while, before he threw a couple touchdowns down the stretch, I think at one point his TD to interception ratio was something like 28-2 or something like that. So he has played the position as well as ever. He's not throwing for the kind of yardage totals. I mean, he once threw for almost 5,500 yards, and he was just a hair under 4,000 this year because they can run and play a little more defense and, you know, don't ask him to do it all by himself anymore. But his peak was probably 2011, but he's not far off it right now.
Yeah, but what I find amazing about that is that literally, I mean, he's only got maybe two top receivers. One's in the backfield, and Alvin Kamara, yeah. And then the other one's Michael Thomas.
It really is, and I think that bit them in the butt a little bit in December when their offense started to falter. When things were going great, it didn't seem to matter. They had the Thanksgiving night game at home against Atlanta where he became the first quarterback ever to throw touchdown passes to four different undrafted guys. Three of them were catching like their first career touchdown pass, and it just seemed like, man, it doesn't matter who's out there. He can complete passes. But that stopped being true a little bit. I think Dallas was the first team to do it, and a couple others have, where just double-team and manhandle Michael Thomas and double-team and manhandle Alvin Kamara and force these other guys to beat you. So I think it really actually helped them a lot getting Ted Ginn Jr. back. And I do think we're going to see Kamara very heavily involved in the passing game. So that becomes sort of a top-three option sort of thing.
I mean, in that first Philadelphia game, what did they do to just spank the offensively, just to spank the Eagles 41-7? What type of strategy did they use?
Well, I think the Eagles secondary is particularly injured. Like, I mean, they were 30th in the NFL in pass defense for the whole season, but I think they were particularly banged up in that game and had a lot of backups playing other than safety Malcolm Jenkins. I think the Eagles did try to pay a lot of attention to Kamara and Thomas, and the Saints had a lot of success going away from them. Tre'Quan Smith, who has not had a very consistent year, their rookie receiver, had 10 catches for 157 yards in that game. And then, you know, whenever possible, they still did get a few of them to Thomas and Kamara. I mean, everybody had success in that game. But, you know, I think when the Eagles aren't getting the pressure up front with their front four, that secondary was pretty easy to pick apart when they were banged up early in the season. And I think Sean Payton is the best in the business at exploiting matchups when a team isn't forcing Drew Brees to throw in a hurry. And like I said, I think that's something that will change this time around. It was pretty fluky that the Eagles didn't get much pressure on them in that game, because that is something they're usually pretty good at.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing that I think Sean Payton doesn't get enough credit for is that he has consistently put together good offensive lines. You know, lines that have always been at the best as far as protecting Drew Brees, you know, somehow getting the right type of height on them that you don't necessarily have Drew Brees. You know, because again, somebody brought this up this week, is that usually there's about 100 throws a season that Drew just basically can't see. He's able to do it with just his instinct, his knowledge of the game, you know, where he knows everybody's going to be. But, I mean, offensive line is something I don't think Sean Payton gets enough credit for.
No, and this one in particular, and I was thinking that but should have mentioned it with how they played so well during that stretch early in the season. When their line was healthy up until December, it's as good as any line in the league, and it's as good as any line all the way across the board. Left tackle Teron Armstead and right tackle Ryan Ramczyk were named second-team All-Pros. Center Max Unger was named to the Pro Bowl. Right guard Larry Warford was named to the Pro Bowl last year, and left guard Andrus Peat is a top 15 draft pick who's been really good for them. So all five of those guys, they did get really banged up down the stretch, and I think that's an area where the Saints are going to be even better in the playoffs than they were in December, because they're really going to take advantage of having been able to rest a lot of those guys in week 17 and then get the first round bye.
How's Max Unger been able? Because I know when he was here, they thought he was heading down the back slope of his career, and yet he's just had amazing seasons for the Saints.
Yeah, and he had injury issues in Seattle, and he's been really healthy here. He's been a real Iron Man for them. He's been fantastic. He, you know, he's been named a captain, I think, every year since he's been here, or at least since his second season here. Great leader for that line. Really tough and athletic guy that can do all the things the Saints like to do, whether it's run blocking or getting out on screen passes, that kind of stuff. You know, obviously that Jimmy Graham trade was such a shock for everyone around here. But the way Max Unger has played and the way Graham has actually been the one dealing with injury problems, you can't help but say the Saints won that deal.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Then the other thing that I think has been understated is just what they've done with the defense, because that's always been one of the big problems they seem to have. I mean, that three-year stretch where Drew went 7-9 with some of the worst defensive mm-hmm. numbers in the history mm-hmm. of the league. I mean, this defense has really been pretty good.
Yeah, huge difference for them. And that started last year. It started a lot with a fantastic couple of drafts that they've had. You know, not only did they get Kamara and Michael Thomas, but they got defensive tackles Sheldon Rankins and David Onyemata 2 years ago. Marshall Warren, safety Marcus Williams. I think they hit on free agency with linebacker DeMario Davis. And then obviously Cam Jordan at defensive end. He's been an all-pro the last couple of years. He's terrific. They really started to build up the talent. Dennis Allen's done a good job as their coordinator. And you're absolutely right. I mean, that used to be the thing that was holding the Saints back, but there have been games now over these last 2 years where the reason they're winning, and that's how you get to 13-3, when their offense is that good, and then on the offense's bad days, the defense can step up and win games for them.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that the crowd's got to be pretty jacked. I mean, is this as lively of a group of followers as it's been with the Saints?
Yeah, I mean, this one's been building up. Expectations were high. You know, we show up at the Saints practice facility every day every week, and we see the giant banner that Sean Payton put up this summer that says, "Prove them right," which was his sort of mantra for, you know, everybody loves to have that everyone's doubting us, let's prove them wrong mentality. And he's like, well, everyone's picking us to win this year, but let's have that same mentality that we got to prove them right. And they've handled it really well. I mean, you know, pressure's on to make sure you live up to a regular season by doing it in the playoffs as well. But they've been building toward this for 2 years. They got the number one seed, which they know is so important in the NFL, especially when you have the kind of home field advantage they do. So it's all set up to be a special season, and the home fans will be ready to do their part over these next 2 weeks.
How much do you think it helps the team as far as preparation to basically, I think what the last two games I think were at home, to basically almost have a month at home and the only road trip is going to the Super Bowl if they win the next two games?
Yeah, it's a pretty short flight to Atlanta too.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, the opposite happened. They played three road games in a row. Now, one was a Thursday night at Dallas to start December, and then they were at Tampa Bay, like, whatever, 10 days later. And then 8 days later, they were playing a Monday night game at Carolina. And they really struggled during that three-game road stretch. So this is sort of the reward for that. Once they finally survived that stretch, it was they don't have to play outdoors again for the rest of the season.
Yeah, pretty good, too. So now, with the return of Ted Ginn, I mean, how much has he helped? Because, you know, you're right about the inexperience with the rookies, the undrafted guys that were out there on Michael Thomas.
Yeah, look, I mean, he helps for a couple of reasons. One, he helps because he's a good player, and he's earned the trust mm-hmm. of Drew Brees. He had his two best games in the Saints uniform, I think, were the two playoff games last year. He was outstanding in the playoffs last year. And he's a real trusted veteran for them. But even more importantly, defenses have to respect him. I mean, they know he's a guy that they have to pay attention to in all situations, but especially that deep speed that he has never lost. He's going to obviously have to attract a lot of attention from safeties and corners going deep down the field. So that opens things up underneath for guys like Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara.
Okay, well, it's going to be fun to kind of watch because, again, that's a fun offense, and now the defense is kind of fun to watch, and I would imagine that it should be good. The only bad part, Mike, is that you don't get any miles for travel.
I can live with that.
Which is up. Hey, Mike, thanks for joining us, and I hope to see you here the next week or so.
Next year, so I'll make up for it next year.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Hey, Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, John.
Mike Triplett, ESPN.com. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
I don't know why the Cleveland Browns would wait till Saturday, but they made the official announcement that Freddie Kitchens is going to be the head coach. I mean, everybody's known that now since Thursday, but the announcement now made official today. Kitchens promoted from offensive coordinator, where he started out as a quarterback coach. He becomes the 17th head coach of the Cleveland Browns. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing very well. Now, although it is raining here now in Los Angeles, I'm just looking out the window and actually it's pouring as we speak.
Oh, that's not good. Who do you think will have the advantage in that weather?
I think it would be the Rams, because again, I think that you look at the Cowboys. I mean, you know, they have to just basically try to run the ball and keep the score low and keep it close. And I still think that the Rams, of course, you know, they have Todd Gurley coming back from the knee injury. He's pretty much had about a month to try to get that knee right. He gave him the last two games off, and I just think that the advantage really goes to the Rams. And you know, the Cowboys aren't a great road team.
Yeah. Based on the Seahawks season, who do you think outperformed the contract and who do you think underplayed their contract?
Bradley McDougal at $4.5 million outperformed his contract. Certainly, you look at Frank Clark, who was making just his rookie contract, that he outplayed it. You look at Mike Davis; I think he outplayed his contract. I mean, clearly, I think you can see Chris Carson as a 7th round pick outplayed his contract. As far as under. Unfortunately, because he missed so much time, when K.J. Wright played, he played to his level, but again, he missed 11 games. And so I think that held some things back. Really, because, I mean, the one thing is they've let so many good contracts go, they didn't have a lot of big contracts. I mean, clearly, you know, Doug Baldwin didn't play to his $11.5 million salary because of his injuries. But when he did get out there, I mean, he was so valuable for Russell Wilson. So I guess you could say they didn't get the $11.5 million out of him. But, again, he's still such a good player and so valuable. And, again, next year you would anticipate that he's going to be healthy.
Yeah. I think KJ outperformed his contract too, but the one that really sticks out is Trey Flowers. If you think he's a rookie that transferred to, from safety to cornerback, and also, unlike Shaquille still had Richard Sherman, who was mentoring and helping him last year. Like, to do that with another young quarterback in their, cornerback in their second year, that's pretty impressive to do.
Agreed. And I was just going through the numbers yesterday, and Trey Flowers actually had a little bit better of a season as far as being thrown on him than even Shaquille Griffin, because I think both had given up, like, I think, what was it, 44 pass completions on Trey Flowers, and each gave up 4 touchdown passes, which I think is really good. I think there was 63% of the throws on Griffin, and it was less on Flowers. But no, there's so many positive things about Flowers, because I know some people thought, again, they're not saying he's as good as Richard Sherman. That would be almost too much to ask. But what they're saying is that his footwork in his rookie season was actually better than Richard Sherman. And I think you can see that he puts himself in a good spot. I think that he has a chance to be a really good corner, and there's no doubt that he's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Who underplayed their contract? I would say
you'd have to say Doug Baldwin. Yeah, because, again, 50 catches, but, again, so much of it was injuries. I mean, when he played valiantly. I mean, he tried every way possible to be out there as much as he can, but, he had so many MRIs and so many different injuries during the season. And just, it was just an unlucky season for him. Now it's a matter of just bouncing back, and that's why, again, there should be no effort at all to take him off the team. He's too valuable.
Yeah, he is very valuable and a great leader, and he's helped out Tyler Lockett a lot too. I don't think Tyler Lockett would be as good without him, like just helping him with the other techniques.
Agreed. And that's where the leadership came in. You know, McDougal was such a great leader for the group of defensive backs, Doug Baldwin for the wide receiver group. And, again, I think everything's on the positive right now. It's they still need to get more help on defense, particularly now the way this division is. You've got 3 offensive coaches with some of the more advanced type of offenses in there. And so you better keep getting the defense better. And if they can get that defense back in the teens with the scoring they have on offense, they're going to be good shape, get back to that 12, maybe 13 win level.
Would you talk about re-signing Bobby Wagner this offseason, just like re-signing Russell Wilson?
Yeah, I would have to think that he's not going to be the priority right now, but I think they'd want to get something done, because you can start to make the argument that he's having kind of a Hall of Fame type career, that he's going to be one of the few guys to get that third contract. Russell's going to get it, because quarterbacks do get third and fourth contracts. You debate whether it's going to go KJ Wright, may not happen, but overall I think that I think the first one you want to get done is Frank Clark, because it's going to be 17-18 million. It's going to be a big contract, and you don't want to necessarily tie up in a franchise tag. You want to get that deal done. Hey, Tara, thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dan in Seattle. Hey, Dan.
Professor, love the show. Question regarding kickers. Why doesn't the league value kickers more? If you look at last year, Blair Walsh cost us a couple games, and arguably Seabass cost us helped us lose the Dallas game. Why don't they value kickers more in the league? given the number of
points. Well, they value kickers. I mean, but the problem is that they each year make the job tougher for the kickers. You know, moving the extra points back to the 15-yard line, now making it a 33-yard kick, that makes it tougher. I think you can see that, some of the things going on with field goals and the number of missed field goals. I mean, the problem is, just like quarterbacks, there aren't 32 great quarterbacks around, just like there's not 32 great kickers. And sometimes kickers get into slumps and have their bad one. But no, they value kickers. It's just a matter, where do you find them? Because again, because a lot of times what happens is a kicker has to fail a couple times before he starts succeeding. And so he bounces around the league. And again, sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot to kind of guess to see which one's going to be the one that works. I mean, paid the $1.8 million or so for Sebastian Janikowski. You know, they failed on Blair Walsh. You know, they picked up at the very cheap Jason Myers. And as it turns out, Jason Myers was a Pro Bowler. I mean, he had a great season for the New York Jets.
Do you think they would, with the success of the drafting a punter, which worked out really well, was kind of contrarian, do you think, would they consider drafting a kicker?
With only four draft choices now, I'd say no. But once, John Snyder starts making his deals and trying to, get value in that, I mean, he'll get it between 8 and 10. And now I think you can, at the current number, when you only have four, they need players to be on the field more so than they do a kicker. Again, you need to have the kicker. There's no question about it. But with only four draft choices currently, then they've got to try to do it. But again, that's why I think it's essential that they try to get compensatory picks. Because for lost free agents, like if Earl Thomas and K.J. Wright and others start to leave, they definitely need those compensatory picks, because the one thing that you can do now that you really couldn't do 5-6 years ago is trade those compensatory picks and get more picks in this draft. So I think that's going to be, one of the challenges that they have. But at the moment, with only four, no, I don't think you can draft a kicker. But, one of the things that they did with Michael Dixon, they considered him to be one of the best punters to come out in years. And that's why they traded up to get him, and they turned out to be right. Hey, Dan, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.